I took a breath and shrugged my shoulders with a smile. My goal was to escape my imprisonment so I could save the humans of this world from the rule of the invading elvens. When Kanneth came, he also accused me of being a pretender and insisted on taking me back with him to face trial and execution. I promised to give Talaxthi some information if she helped me escape Kanneth. What was this information? Ternia interrupted me. The Empress wanted to know the location of the radical I came through. Ternia stared at me intently, and I knew she didn't believe me. She wants to destroy them, I explained, before Ternia could question me. The Obarni woman turned her bright blue eyes to Talaxthi. You fucking bitch. Destroy the radicals? Are you insane? Did you think that would actually work? I turned my head to look at the Empress, but her face might as well have been carved out of marble. Her expression didn't change, and her eyes stared into the empty space between Ternia and me. Viernine's red eyes blazed with intensity. I wondered if the woman would be willing to leave her Empress's side. Kanneth was just performing his duty, and I told Talaxthi that she had to kill him. She resisted, but I didn't see any other way I could free myself, since I knew I could never beat him in combat. We agreed that once I returned, I would tell her of the radical, and she would tell me of my daughter. I knew Ternia would believe this. It was easier to buy an impossible lie that protected your beliefs than a disillusioning truth. So who killed my brother and his warriors? Ternia asked. Fahalda and her troops. They followed Kanneth and me to a campsite. You saw what happened. Silence hung in the air. Ternia nodded, and her head bowed for a few seconds. Did you have any part in this? The Obarni woman raised her head and looked at Viernine. No, she was not one of Fehalda's assassins, I said, perhaps a bit too quickly. No, Ternia, I was at the castle, by my Empress's side, Viernine said. Her voice was monotonous, and I realized that the pewter-haired woman had already accepted that she would die today. Did you know of this plan? No, Ternia, Viernine said after a slight hesitation. How about you? Ternia looked to Disanti. I know of things past, present, and future. Disanti's eyes seemed to dance like green waves. Don't speak in riddles, bitch. I am deciding your fate, Ternia growled. I saw Viernine's grip on her sword tighten. When the destroyer spoke the words, I saw the conversation unfold in my memory. At the time, I was sitting on a bench, many hundreds of yards away, speaking to your brother about Kyair's combat abilities. Ternia looked puzzled for a few seconds before she spoke. This doesn't explain how I came across you, Fehalda, and Viernine, walking back to the human's castle. Her eyes focused on me again. After Kanneth was killed, Fehalda and I had an argument. We fought, and she beat me into unconsciousness. When I awoke, she had left. What did you argue about? She asked what her sister and I spoke of. I told her to go fuck herself with the sharp end of her sword. I shrugged. Then I woke up next to the dead bodies of Kanneth and his warriors. I ran back to the castle and assumed that the Empress had betrayed me. My human friends were prisoners now, since Talaxthi controlled the castle. I freed them, but we were separated. Our plan was to meet at the Eastern Mountains, but when I reached the destination, Viernine and Fehalda were already there. Fehalda said that the Empress would keep her word and tell me of my daughter, and she would kill my friends if I did not return. So I returned. Ternia nodded and sat back on the pillow. She didn't say anything for almost a minute, and the tension in the air was electric. I had only included the most believable parts of the truth. She would have accused me of lying if I had been honest about the last few years. Had it really been that long? Time was difficult to gauge after all I had remembered. I had lived hundreds of lifetimes and slept through hundreds more. I counted the seasons carefully and realized that it had been close to 2 years since Nadia had called me forth in the radical. It was autumn now, the second one since I had awoken on this world. Talaxthi, you have committed multiple crimes against the clans. Ternia suddenly spoke, and the tension increased with her words. Your entire race deserves to be annihilated, just as the betrayer wanted. Ternia shifted in her seat, and her voice cracked. My brother was a friend and advocate for your race. He was impressed by your fortitude and cleverness. You repaid his kindness with treachery and murder. Yet I know that if he could speak to me from behind the grave, he would still want me to forgive you and feel sympathetic to the plight of your people. Talaxthi nodded, but the creeping fear soon overtook her composure. But if my brother were in my place, and you had killed me instead, he would have already exacted revenge. He would have set his rage upon your people, innocent or not. Ternia and Talaxthi stared at each other for a few seconds, then Ternia continued. So feel fortunate that you betrayed the stronger of us. I will allow your servants, Virnine and Disanti, to leave my camp unharmed. Your other guards are already dead. You will serve as the pretender's concubine for the remainder of our journey. Then I shall delight in ending your miserable existence. After you are disposed of, I will beseech the council to rid this world of the elven scourge and free the humans you have overtaken. And as you die, know I will dedicate the rest of my life, all of my strength, energy, and power, to ridding the universe of your race. We will enslave every one of your people and farm your skulls for ovules. My clan will rise to dominate the others. The two bears will colonize every planet. Each life we take from an elven, each skull we harvest, will send us to another world to find and eliminate thousands more. Talaxthi's face finally cracked, and a single tear dripped from each eye. Her jaw clenched, and I could hear the sound of her breath come out in painful gasps of agony. Virnine was moments away from drawing her sword, but then the Empress raised her hand. "Can they leave now?" Her voice was hardly more than a whisper. "I suggest that they scurry back to the rest of your army quickly, and leave no path for my scouts to track." Talaxthi nodded and turned to Virnine. "Make sure she returns safely." "As you command, Empress," Virnine nodded with renewed composure. "I have seen how this ends," Disanti sighed, and stood up from her seat with a swish of her gown. "And how does it end?" Ternia smirked. "Everyone that opposes him suffers the same fate. If his generals could not kill him, your council will also fail." The jade-haired woman turned to me and said the words as if she was commenting on something unimportant. "The pretender will face his punishment, as will your empress, and eventually you will too, Disanti. This is just a stay of execution. When I return to this world, I will come for you." "He isn't a pretender, Ternia, and you will never return to this world." Disanti nodded at Talaxthi, and then seemed to float through the door. Her empress nodded back, but the movement seemed odd. I wondered if Disanti was the other single-born. Virnine saluted one last time, opened her mouth as if to speak, closed it, and then turned to follow Disanti out of the tent. When she passed me, our eyes met, but I couldn't decipher the flurry of emotions in my ex-lover's ruby eyes. "Please return with Viernine and Disanti," Talaxthi said to her servants. I knew that they were trained warriors and bodyguards who would gladly die for the Empress, but they nodded at her command, and they solemnly filed out of the exit. This left Talaxthi, Ternia, her two warrior women, and me in the Empress's grand pavilion. "We will depart in an hour." Ternia stood as gracefully as a panther, and her guards followed the movement. "You may make use of this tent during the rest of our sojourn. I will have guards around the perimeter, Pretender, so do not think that our agreement allows you to flee." "I understand." I nodded and began to relax. Viernine, Disanti, and Talaxthi were still alive. The outcome could have been much worse. "We will tell you when it is time to begin traveling again. My staff will tear down this tent and set it up each night." The three women walked toward the exit. "Thank you," I said. "Pretender." Ternia was a few feet away from the stairs, leading out of the pavilion when she turned around. "I hope your request to keep Talaxthi alive for a few extra weeks is not part of some grander scheme." "No," I answered, and I felt my stomach twist into knots. "Good. I have over 100 warriors here, and there will be thousands more once we reach Green Solo. There is no escape for you, or this elven bitch." Ternia smiled like a pleased cat, and her two flanking warriors mirrored her expression. Then the three women turned and walked up the stairs. Talaxthi and I were alone on the circle of pillows. We stared at each other for half a minute without speaking. I listened to the conversations from the campsite surrounding our tent. Those sounds had been absent during our meal, and I wondered how long Ternia had this ploy planned. A few hundred yards away, I picked out the voice of the Obarni leader telling someone to bury all the elven corpses. Then she spoke again and assigned guards to the Empress's pavilion. Ternia told them to listen for sounds of us fucking, and if they didn't hear any in the next 5 minutes, to come and get her. "Do you think she will actually let Disanti and Viernine leave?" I asked. "Fuck you, Kyaer," she whispered, and the expression of anger on her face reminded me of the last conversation I had with Nadia. I sighed and stood. The dishes from the meal were still arranged by each pillow, but I stepped around them and walked toward the Empress. She stood with a graceful movement and took a small step away from me. "I will not enjoy this. I will curse you every time your vile body violates me." She seethed and spat the words. "Shut up and take off your clothes." I sighed again and shook my head. I said the words loudly and hoped the guards heard. She didn't move to remove her garments, and I raised my voice again. "I can just tell Ternia you aren't cooperating. Viernine and Disanti are probably dead already." Her voice faded into a whisper. "Do you want to risk it?" I shrugged, pointed my finger at her, and twirled it around. "Fuck you, Kyaer." She reached down to the silk belt on her robe and untied it with a practiced move. The garment fell open, and she shrugged her slender shoulders in a motion that made it slide off of her body with a swish. Underneath the robe, she wore a thin green embroidered pair of lace shorts. A matching lace cover hugged her small round breasts. She started to remove the undergarments. "Stop," I commanded, and her hands froze. Her hair hung over part of her face, and she looked up from the ground with a single eyebrow raised and a furious gleam in her eyes. "Come here." I beckoned with a finger and opened my arms as if to embrace her. She dropped her arms, and I could hear her teeth begin to grind. She took a hesitant step, then another, and then she stood before me. I wrapped my arms around her beautiful body and pulled her against me. "How long will it take for you to teach Jesme how to close the radicals?" My voice was a fraction of a whisper, and I muttered the question into the Empress's pointed ear. It was hard to ignore her scent while holding her so closely. It was a mixture of pine, lavender, and lilac. "Months, perhaps a year," she whispered back into my own ear. "We are going to have to steal their ovules and escape," I explained so softly I almost could not hear my own voice, but my lips were touching the inside of her ear now, so I hoped she understood. "You are speaking madness." One of her hands reached up to my hair to hold my head while she whispered. "Do you want to die? Do you have a better idea? We find out where they keep the ovules, steal them, and then get back to Naya and your army. Then we kill these fuckers, and Jess closes the radicals so no more can come through. Is this your idea of a plan? It won't work." The closeness of her body, combined with her hand on my head and her scent, was bringing me to a state of arousal. I wondered if she was using her magic to control me again, but perhaps she didn't need the power. The way I held her body pushed her firm breasts into my chest. I debated dropping my hands to the small of her back, but that would only bring our hips closer together. "You would be dead right now if I hadn't begged for you to stay with me, and you've yet to tell me a better plan. Are you going to give up now? We are still alive, and I plan on staying that way and staying on this world. No, I am not going to give up. There has to be a better plan. I will think of one. Did you find out how many days we have left?" I could hear conversation outside of the tent. A voice asked why it was so quiet inside. It seemed that Ternia took her mandates seriously. "Less than a week. Was this your intent, to keep me alive? Why? I'd rather be on this world than dead by their counsel." She tilted her head away from my mouth and studied my face for a second. The anger in her eyes was gone, and she pulled her mouth to my ear. A shiver went down my spine, and I wished I did not find her so attractive. She looked too much like Nadia, and it didn't help that she was mostly naked and in my arms. "Thank you. This does not mean I forgive you for all the horrors that you have inflicted upon my kind, but it is a small step." It surprised me that she actually voiced the words of gratitude. "I will cooperate, and if the dead gods bless us with a massive amount of luck, we might be successful. At least we will live for a few more days," she finished. "We aren't going to be able to do much of anything if Ternia suspects we are conspiring. If we can sound convincing, they might leave us our privacy. What if they come down and see that we aren't naked?" Her voice had another hint of anger to it. "Then I'll rip off my clothes and fuck you. If you don't want that to happen, you better make your moans convincing." I pushed her away from my ear and let go of her body. We stood a few feet apart now, but she didn't make any noise. A few dozen seconds passed, and I frantically waved my arms at her and shot the elven woman a glare. She let out a long breath, inhaled, and began to moan as if she was in the throes of passion. It only took a few seconds for my manhood to let me know that Talaxthe's efforts were more than satisfactory.
Chapter 33. Isle Rathi. "We need to accompany you," Rolyara said again. My sister and brother nodded, but I shook my head for the 20th time. "No." "Why?" the blue-haired woman asked. "This is insane, and you will be destroyed if they are actually in the cave." "They might not even be in there. If they are, then I want to be alone so that they know I mean them no harm. Can I speak to you privately before you enter?" Nairathi was angry, they all were. But her eyes were pits of tar, and she smelled of hot coals. Fine. It wasn't the first time she had asked me since we arrived at the mouth of the dragon's cave yesterday, and I already knew what she was going to tell me. I took another look at the large maw of black depth hidden under a rocky outcropping on the south side of the central peak. I had used the artifact Nairathi and I had found in the tower to pinpoint the rough location of the lair. My scouts had found it after 2 weeks of searching the precarious surfaces of the jagged mountains. The wind here blew ice cold, and it carried the scent of snow, pine, and terror. The terror was my own. "I know why you were doing this," she said when we were far enough away from the group to prevent them from overhearing. "Because I want to win this war." I sighed and crossed my arms over my chest. "No, you are taking the coward's way out." She glared at me, and I could taste her anger like a red pepper. "I do feel like a coward. I am terrified of entering that cavern." I smiled at the white woman and thought about how much I had changed in the last few decades. Though Nairathi was my most beloved sister, there was a time when I would have killed anyone who would dare to call me a coward, even her. "You don't want to face him." She leveled a finger at me. The frigid wind caught her snow-colored hair, and it spun behind her like a tornado. It tasted more pine on the air, and it helped calm me. I wondered where the scent originated. We were well above the tree line and had not seen anything with needles for 2 days of marching. "Who?" I asked, though I knew the answer. "Kyair, damn it! You know where this battle will end. You don't think we will win, and you hope that the dragons are still somewhere in that cave. You hope that they will kill you. You want to be rid of this problem." She shook her head, and I could smell the pain and remorse coming from her body like a rotting lime. "We aren't going to win." When I said the words, her eyes opened wide and her scent changed to one of fear. "Even with the dragon's aid, it will not be possible. Have you seen Kyair in combat?" "It is too late for us, sister. This is the only chance, and it is slim." "No, there is another way," she said. "Are you going to tell me about these bullshit other worlds and those towers?" "Yes, there are free worlds for our people. I just need time to figure out how we can reach them," she pleaded. "Fine, I'll just ask Kyair not to destroy our kind. He'll gladly take that truce. He destroyed half of our race because he just wanted an apology from me." I closed my eyes, and a small part of me wished that the dragons would eat me. "Have you tried that?" Her question surprised me, and I stared at her. When my eyes couldn't tell me if she was jesting, I ran my tongue over my lips to detect any sarcasm. There was none. "Meet with him. Offer a truce. Give him what he wants and buy us some time so I can figure out how these radicals function." "What if he wants my death?" I asked the obvious question. "Would you be willing to die to save us?" Her eyes narrowed. "There would be no guarantee that he would be satisfied with only my death. We are assuming these shrines work the way you hope, and that you will be able to figure out how to use them in time." I inhaled her scent and raised my hands away from my chest in a motion of surrender. "Fine, fine, sister. Yes, I would sacrifice myself for my people. Kyair is my creation, after all." "Good." She smiled for the first time since I told her of my plan to speak to the dragons. "I will send an envoy to his army." "You will wait," I commanded, and the smile dropped from her face as quickly as it had appeared. "I am still going to speak with the dragons. If they kill me, then you can negotiate the truce with Kyair. If he wants me dead, tell him the dragon already did the job, and he can take revenge on them if he wants." "No, please, Nairathi, I beg you." Her hands clasped my arm. "Can't you sense the evil from that place? The malice? I never believed in such creatures, but if any existed, they would live in that abyss." I nodded at her, and in my heart I agreed. The cave looked like the twisted maw of a carrion beast. It was wide enough to ride 10 horses through and half as tall. A stale, dry air poured out, and it reeked of a foul scent I had never tasted. It was a sick mixture of fungus, bones, and rotten meat. Kair might just say no outright. I will need a backup plan, Nyarathi. Have the warriors retreat a mile down the mountain. It is time to smell these creatures up close and determine if the legends of their power is true. They were brave words, but the ice in my stomach was beginning to turn into nausea. By the dead gods, you are so stubborn! Fine, go die in there. There is just one more item I wish to discuss with you. Her face became impassive again, and she waited for me to respond. What is it? I am with Offspring. You sick? I asked. Yes. A faint smile came to her lips. I expected that outcome eventually. Perhaps I should have felt happiness for my sister, but I didn't care much for the thought of children now. It would hamper our ability to fight Kair's forces because I would have to withdraw her from the war after a year, when her body became too swollen to be effective in combat. What about it do you wish to discuss? You do not seem to care, she said flatly. You mistake my focus on important matters for apathy. I gestured around the mountain and toward the cave. Perhaps I caused all of this, but the genesis was my conception. I never asked to be the single born. I never wanted to have offspring, let alone for the profit of my father and our mother. But now you can do what you want, Ahilarathi. Your womb is your own. No, I can't. My eyes rested on the entrance of the cave, and the last pangs of my fear finally fled my body. This is my last chance to save our race. I don't even know if we are worth saving. I walked away from my sister and toward the mouth of the mountain. She followed behind me, but said nothing. I finally reached Rel'Yara, and then turned back to Nyarathi. Your plan is sound. If I don't return, attempt to make peace with Kair. My sister nodded, and her mouth set into a firm line. The air tasted of lemons and salt instead of pine. I regarded the two women for a moment. The terror surged in my stomach, and I fought it down again. I was Ahilarathi, the single-born. I was afraid of no creature on this world or any other. Save for Kair. I wanted to thank them for their love, loyalty, and friendship. I wanted to tell them how much I loved them. But voicing this would be an admission of fear. An admission that Nyarathi was right, that the dragons awaited me in the deep, that they would devour me. I told myself this was foolish. These dragons were dust now. These dragons had never existed. I would enter the cave and return with nothing. Return with my life, but no more options to save my people. Return unharmed to face Kair. So I said nothing. I faced the black hole of the cave and walked toward it. The wind moaned again across the frigid mountain peaks, and my breath filled the air with the scent of lilacs. I tasted freshness and pine again, and the faint remnants of the scent of my sister, of my people. All these pleasant scents began to fade within a few hundred feet of the cave. I was overwhelmed by the scent of death, algae, fungi, and emptiness. I paused for a few moments to steady my breath, regretting my choice not to bring a torch. I almost turned back to ask Rel'Yara or my sister for one, but decided against it. I had to commit to my original plan. I did not need to fear these creatures. I was Ahilarathi, the single-born. I was afraid of no creature on this world. I stepped into the cave and was immediately enveloped in a darkness so profound it was palpable. The black seemed to seep out of the cave and smother the light beyond its borders. I used the world to create a small fire, but it was too dim to help much against the weight of this darkness. The rocks of the walls were smooth and polished, so that the light bounced off of every surface as in a mirror. I glanced over my shoulder, and could no longer see the light of day through the opening of the cave. A curtain of black silk had been drawn to enclose me in the lair. The creatures lived. I sensed their power. I pushed my shaking legs a few steps forward and continued to study the inside of the cave. Columns of granite supported the high ceiling above me, so smooth they looked as if they had been melted. Shades of gray glinted as I crept forward, my light growing ever more dim and inadequate. There was a soft and distant movement farther into the cave, and I turned my eyes away from the rocks toward the noise. The cavern bent downward to the right. I continued on my journey and inhaled slowly to taste more of the air. The stench of decay seemed to dissipate, but the air still tasted empty, as if nothing lived here. The stalagmites and stalactites came down like teeth and created hidden nooks of deep darkness I could not see into. I heard movement again, but saw nothing. "I am Aiel Lorathi, leader of the elven people." I meant to sound confident, but my voice came out a shaky gasp. I had walked 500 yards into the cavern, but it felt like miles. I began to feel the oppression and weight of the earth above me.
"Have you come to mock us?"
The voices filled the air in all directions. They spoke at different volumes and tones, as their tempo and pacing was slightly off, so the words hit my ears at different times. I spun around, and the reflections off of the walls danced like light through a waterfall.
"Perhaps you have come to punish me for my betrayal."
There was venom in the voices, raw hatred, but also sadness and loss, even fear. I realized that the voices were in my head as well, as if a group of men and women whispered in my ear. My blood froze, and I could only smell my own terror. It was a stink of rotten cabbage and broccoli. I knew the stench well from all the elvens who were terrified of me. "I seek your help," I managed to gasp out. I still could not smell or hear where the voices came from. There was silence for half a minute, and I was able to catch my breath and calm my scent to something halfway close to normal. I waited for another length of time, but there was no response. I debated speaking again, but my tongue would not form the words. Then the laughter of 1,000 voices filled the cavern and rang throughout the walls like chimes. It started softly, as if the ghosts were slowly understanding a joke, then grew in intensity until it felt as if my eardrums would burst. I fell to my knees and my flame extinguished. I covered my ears with my hands, but it did nothing to dampen the sound, and I screamed in pain. As soon as I shrieked, the voices stopped. I opened my eyes, expecting blackness. Instead, a purple glow lit the cavern 100 yards ahead, illuminating the walls, floor, and ceiling clearly. I rose and walked toward the violet light. I had to proceed slowly. The ground grew rough and uneven as it sloped ever more steeply downward. I came to a wall of jagged columns that extended from the floor like teeth. There, a doorway was carved into the rock, leading to another room. I forced myself inside. Then I saw my mother. She sat upon a throne atop a pile of polished stones. The glow emanated from her body, and I struggled to comprehend what I saw. The woman was dead. This could not be her. But it was her. Everything about the figure was my mother, save the strange violet luminance that made her glow like a wisp.
"You were fools then. You are a fool now to come here."
My mother's mouth did not move, but the voices seemed to emerge from where she sat on the throne. She wore a tight-fitting evening gown with a slit down one side, revealing her athletic body. I remembered the dress. She had often worn it to entice males and females to follow her wishes.
"Are you Rikatalos Dikatri?"
I forced myself to question the creature's identity instead of asking the obvious question about her appearance. I knew what my eyes were telling me, but my nose told a different story. There was no scent from whatever sat on top of the throne.
"You have not forgotten my name. Why have you forgotten everything else?"
The woman turned her head slightly and looked down at me. The purple glow was coming from her hair. It was hard to determine the color of the long mane, but it seemed to be as black as the cavern. My mother's hair had been bright platinum. I found small stones at a temple on a nearby mountain. The stones told of your cave. I realized the stones beneath her throne were skulls. Elven skulls. My stomach turned to ice.
The Obarni,
the voices stated. They threaten our existence. I came to beseech you to help us in the war against them. The glow had intensified, and I could now see that the throne was crafted of bones. The stench of my fear had returned. The howling laughter formed the crescendo of an ear-splitting symphony. I found myself on my knees again, clutching my head in agony. The laughter continued, and the pain was too much. It was the agony of losing Kyaer over and over while my mind replayed the murder of his family. Please stop. My words were a whimper, and I hated how weak I felt when faced with this creature that resembled my mother.
You want us to kill the Obarni again?
A growl filled the cavern. It sounded like an avalanche of rocks. Yes. Cold sweat poured out of my skin. Their leader is too powerful. We face extinction. My entire race will be destroyed if you don't help us.
Who is Kyaer?
He is the one I speak of, the leader. I didn't know how she knew Kyaer's name. My head was beginning to ache from the sounds of all the voices. It felt as if my brain was trying to push against the inside of my skull. I had never felt such a pain before.
No. Who is Kyaer?
The voices repeated the question. He was my lover. Now he is my enemy. I answered quickly. Did this creature know that I killed the human's brother and father? What did she want me to say?
What will you give us, Iolarathi, leader of the elven people?
The laughter came again, but it was much softer this time. What do you wish? My people will grant it to you. I felt relief flood into my aching body and head. They were willing to help. I would pay any price.
We wish to destroy you, to feast upon your flesh endlessly until you tell us again that we are your star children. Your favorites, the blessing you gave to the universe. Then we wish to destroy everything living, and we make it in our vision.
Instead of disappointment, I felt anger. I expected to die here. I was willing to die to save my people, but I did not know how to grant her this cryptic request. You wish to kill me? I tried to keep the terror out of my voice and scent. I was successful.
No. That will not help. You will return again. We require your offspring.
Something had changed in the creature's voice. I only heard a single female voice now. My headache had increased. I do not have any offspring.
You will give us one.
This was spoken by a male voice, and I turned around, expecting to see someone standing behind me, but there was nothing but darkness. What if I never bear a child? I fought against the anger building in my stomach. Why did everyone want control of my womb? If it wasn't my own people, it was a band of omnipotent dragons.
You will have a child. We have foreseen it. You will give us the offspring, and your debts will be repaid.
The chorus of voices returned with their nightmarish symphony. You will destroy the Obarni, and I will give you my child? I wanted to clarify the deal.
We will fight one battle in your pathetic war. If Kyaer is like you, it will be an easy victory.
The voice was a single woman's again, but she sounded as if she stood next to me and whispered in my ear. If Kyaer is like me, he is human. What do you mean?
Do you agree to our terms, Iolarathi, leader of the elven people?
The voices seemed urgent, demanding. What if I don't need you for the battle?
What if I can convince the humans to parley peace? I remembered my sister's plea. I wanted to use Ricatalos di Catri, only if everything else failed. The Albarni will never agree to peace. They were created to seek more, always. We have learned much from them, while you have forgotten. It was a single voice again, and there was unspoken sorrow to her words. I didn't know how to respond, so I contemplated my next question. You hesitate. I will alter the agreement to make it more to your liking. She sounded desperate, as if she needed the deal more than I did. We will be present. If a battle occurs, we will act. The child will be our payment. If you make peace with the Albarni, then we will return to our nest and wait for you to visit us during your next war. I couldn't believe my luck, and that gave me pause. This had been too easy. I was still terrified of the creatures, but something was strange about this dealing. I had expected them to ask for food or riches, perhaps sacrifices. I had never imagined they would want my child. I would never take an elven lover and therefore never create this child. "What do you want with the child?" I asked one of the questions that lurked in the back of my mind.
"What is one life in exchange for millions? Would you die to save your elephants? We know the answer. You already have."
The voices filled my mind with urgent whispers. She had not answered my question, but her logic was sound. And I would never have a child to give them. I made that decision long ago. "How do I know you are the creatures I seek, the dragons?" That was the only other explanation for why these negotiations had gone so smoothly. Perhaps I was dealing with something else other than the flying serpents of legend.
"We will show you. Then you will agree."
The voices were urgent now. They tasted my approval. "Yes. If I have proof, then I will agree." It was as if the sun suddenly rose in the cavern. The light burned my eyes, and I covered my face with my hands to keep from crying. My eyes adjusted to the blindness, and I removed my palms from my eyelids. Then I knew true terror, for I gazed upon evil so pure and diabolical that all my senses reeled in horror. I made a mistake coming here. It was a horrible choice that perhaps justified Kair's desire to exterminate me and all of my kind. I never should have spoken to the monster, nor promised her one of my offspring. But it was too late now.
Chapter 34 The Albarni. I crested the final slope of the mountains and surveyed the valley below. It was dusk, and though the last sliver of the orange sun would soon disappear behind the distant crags, there was still enough light to cast a warm radiance across the land. A river ran through the far side of the valley, winding through miles of long grass dotted with graceful maple and pine trees. I had seen immeasurable beauty during my long search for Iola Rothi, but as I looked upon the idyllic scene that stretched out for miles beneath me, I wanted to set down my bags, rest, and soak in the view. This also could have been because I was carrying several hundred pounds of supplies for Nya Rothi and had been traveling the endless wilderness for the last 6 weeks in search of this place. The woman had told me to get a horse or a mule to carry the load, but an extra animal would mean another mouth to feed, take care of, and protect from predators. It would have slowed me down and forced me to stick to roads and trails. So I had carried the burden across the salt desert that surrounded Dead Flats. I could lug it another 1,000 miles. Iola Rothi's sister had told me that this was a small village of elvens. I was delivering mostly salt, but also ink, seeds, and various documents about where her people were hidden. She did not warn me against studying the papers, but she didn't need to. We both understood that my only concern was reaching Iola Rothi, and I cared nothing for hunting elvens anymore. I did want to set down my burden for a few minutes and take in the glory of the setting sun, but now that I was so close to my destination, the thought of becoming one step closer to my lover drove me down the dangerous path toward the foot of the mountain. The weight that pressed down on my shoulders with an unforgiving malice suddenly felt lighter, and the ice-cold wind that pierced these peaks no longer bothered me. I carried a spear in my left hand that I had occasionally used for hunting, but mostly as a walking aid. It served the latter purpose excellently and gave me some additional stabilization when I traversed the steep slopes. My army had always avoided this area, finding the treacherous peaks too difficult to navigate. The mountain range lay on the coastline, and we had believed the mountains shielded nothing but the sea that circled the world and met on the other side of the continent. Even if we had known of this hidden valley, we would not have risked exploring here. The light was fading quickly from the side of the mountain, but I could carry enough speed down the rocky switchbacks to stay ahead of the encroaching darkness. Most of the valley below me was already cloaked in the shadow of the mountains to the west. This allowed me to see the light coming from camp and hearth fires. I had not noticed the buildings from the top of the mountains. By now the elvens had grown as skilled at hiding their presence as my army had been in the days of our inception. Their roofs blended seamlessly into the grass of the meadows and the branches of the forest. I heard them rise out of the grass and pull back their bowstrings before they spoke. Nyarothi had prepared me for the words they would say as a coded test of loyalty. "It is a cold night, stranger. Do you have a place to stay?" There were 20 of them, all elvens and all with short bows. For a flash of a second, something deep inside of my mind screamed to destroy them all. But I forced the instinct back into the pit of my stomach like one would kick at a raving, rabid dog. "I do not have a place to stay. Nyarothi told me that I should ask the dead gods for shelter." I repeated the words that Iola Rothi's sister made me memorize. The group stood still for a few minutes, and then the male who had spoken lowered his bow slowly, and the rest followed. "Our mistress makes strange allies. Those mountains are a difficult trek to make as a human, and that load looks extremely heavy. Are you one of the Obarni?" A few of the elvens raised their arrows at me again. "Yes, but I am no enemy. I owe someone a favor, and am looking for a few in return." "What favors do you seek?" "A few warm meals and a bed would be a start. It has been many nights since Dead Flats." The man was still far away from me, and I fought to keep my nerves steady. I had asked Nyarothi if I would have any problems delivering her shipment as an Obarni, but she confirmed that I would be safe, as long as I didn't tell them my name. "Very well, Obarni. Follow us. We have beds and plenty of food for you. What name are you known by?" "It doesn't matter." The elven man studied me again, and then nodded. He wore a dark brown cloak over his head, but there was enough twilight to see his gold hair and emerald eyes. "Will you hand over your weapon?" "Of course, although I use it mostly to aid in my walking." I extended my left arm with the spear, and then one of the elvens carefully took it from my grip. "Do you have any other weapons?" "A knife for skinning and another for shaving. They are in my packs." He nodded at my words and studied me for a few more seconds. I expected him to ask another question, but instead he turned and walked toward the group of lights. The rest of the elvens circled me at a comfortable distance and seemed to meld into the darkness. if not for the beating of their hearts and the soft sounds of their clothing passing through the long grass, I would not have been able to discern their presence. Shortly we came to the village. There were dozens, perhaps even 100, small dwellings hidden amongst grass and orchard trees. The scent of fruit and vegetables filled the air. The late autumn harvest was underway. Cloaked forms roamed the maintained pathways between the homes and spoke in gentle whispers. There were a few bouts of controlled laughter as I passed, but none of them were aimed in my direction. If anything, the elven inhabitants of this village didn't even seem to notice my passing. After a few twists and turns through the labyrinth of dwellings, we arrived at a simple stone cottage made of stacked river stones and thick wooden beams topped with a steep, thatched roof. "Are you hungry now, O'Barney, or would you prefer to rest?" the elven man with the green eyes asked. "I would be thankful for food and water. There is some among my supplies I can eat if you do not have any to spare." The man had said earlier that they had food, but we passed a significant number of their kind on the way here, and I did not want to impose on them. "Please, take off your packs. You may rest inside, and food shall be delivered. There is a chamber pot if you need to relieve yourself. We will have guards at the door, and they will exchange it for a clean one at your request." I shrugged off my packs, and one of the larger elven bowmen hoisted it onto his back. Before he could leave, I grabbed a few of the smaller kits that contained my toiletries and clothes. Then the elven carried the rest into the darkness. My guide gestured to the cottage, and I opened the thick wooden door and entered. It was a simple place. 20 feet by perhaps 30, two thick vertical beams of wood supported the roof, and a comfortable hammock swung between them. One corner had a chimney and modest fireplace with a pot and hanging hook for cooking. Next to this was a long table. I saw the chamber pot in the other corner, next to a plentiful stack of firewood. There was also an assortment of quilts and other blankets that hung from a rope running from one of the beams to a wall. A small desk sat in the last corner, topped with an oil lamp, pile of parchments, ink vial, and quill. "This is our guest home. Please be welcome. A friend of Nyarothi is a friend of ours, even if he is an O'Barney. Our leader may wish to speak with you, but we'll wait until after you have eaten." "Thank you." He nodded and left. I felt uncomfortably light without my burden. I hated waiting, and now I would have to abide by the elven timetable. But at least they had not attacked me. I paced the small cottage for a few minutes, and then sat on the hammock. It was comfortable, and I had to pry myself out of its embrace to keep from falling asleep. I had not believed that I was exhausted, but spending time in the wilderness traveling, running from my kin, and tracking Iolarothi never gave me a chance to fully relax. The muffled conversations of the elvens and the babble of the distant river were soothing. I knew if I dared to touch the hammock again, I would quickly fall asleep. Maybe for days. There was a constant shuffle of footsteps and whispers outside of the cottage, and I occupied myself for a few moments attempting to make sense of the conversations. Most of it was small talk of weather, harvest plans, and salutations. I listened half-heartedly for a quarter of an hour, and then decided to occupy myself with lighting a fire in the hearth. As soon as I finished stacking the wood and set it ablaze, there was a knock on the door. "Greetings, O'Barney. I have brought you dinner." The woman stepped into my cottage, and I felt the air leave my lungs. All the elvens had a graceful beauty to them. They were slender, with smooth skin, well-formed muscles, and luxurious hair. They were elegantly featured, with sharp, almond-shaped eyes and delicate pointed ears. Iolarothi was the most beautiful woman of their kind, and perhaps having the memory of her murdering my family had kept me from granting the rest of her species any sort of forgiveness. The woman that stood before me was just as beautiful as my lover. Her hair was a dark black that shimmered blue in the firelight. Her eyes were also blue, deep, like the darkest part of the sea, and just as full of mystery. Her skin was the color of light honey, and looked as delicious. She wore a dark green cloak over a tan tunic and leather pants. In her arms she held a tray, laden with metal covers and a pitcher of water. I could smell the scent of roasted meat and cooked vegetables, but for a brief second, I wasn't hungry for food. She moved with such grace, she seemed to float into the cottage. I took a few steps back. Her movements were so smooth, they almost seemed unnatural. She set the tray down on the table next to the fireplace, and then stood before me again. Her eyes never left mine, and my heart began to race. "I've served you a roast pork loin with buttered sprouts mixed with garlic, salt, oranges, and cranberries. There is also a baked yam and a sugared apple for dessert." She didn't take her eyes from mine while she spoke, and my head began to spin. "Thank you. It is very kind of you. My mouth was dry, and I felt incredibly thirsty. Will you require anything else tonight?" "No. Thank you again." I forced the sentence out and tried to tear myself from the unnerving beauty of her gaze. "When will you be leaving us?" The words could have been meant in many different ways, but she seemed more curious than demanding. "Tomorrow morning. I hope to speak to your leader before I leave. I was told that I would be given information." "Who told you that?" "Nyarothi." My head felt like it was lifting off the ground, and I struggled to pull myself back to the wood floor of the cottage. I focused on the smell of the food, and it helped to divert my attention from the woman's stare. "What do you wish to know, O Barney?" My vision cleared, and my brain fought through the effects this woman's presence had on me. "You are the leader here?" I already knew the answer. "Perhaps," she smiled, and I was back in control of my emotions. She was still very beautiful, but my wits were not impacted any more. "I wish to find Iola Rothy," I said. The woman continued to stare into my eyes, but made no movement to indicate that my request surprised her. "Why?" "I love her, and want to spend the rest of my days with her." I debated lying, or telling the blue-eyed elven that it was my own business. Honesty seemed like the best strategy, though. This elven had a power I could sense, and I wanted her as a friend and not an enemy. "That is a good answer, Kyair." She smiled, and the room grew twice as bright. I told no one my name. Nyarothi must have left a note explaining who I was, secured in the baggage I carried. I never bothered to search the contents, but it did not matter. My mission was to find Iola Rothy, and not to understand what methods the elvens were using to keep themselves hidden from my people. "I am glad you approve. Will you tell me?" I asked. "Please eat, or your food will get cold. We can talk while you dine." She indicated the plate, and I moved over to the table. I took the lid off of the single plate and inhaled the divine fragrance of the meat and vegetables. The pork loin was glazed with what smelled and looked like apricot preserve, and the small green sprouts were drenched in butter and garlic. There was a large glass of white wine next to the pitcher of water, and I took a sip of the amber liquid before I began to eat. "Is the food to your liking?" The woman sat upon the hammock and swung her feet above the floor lazily. I guessed she already knew the answer from the speed with which I devoured the meat and set into the vegetables. I had kept myself adequately fed during my trip by hunting, but this food tasted unlike anything I could ever prepare for myself, especially around a campfire. My cooking skills were limited to throwing salt, pepper, and maybe a few scented herbs on roasting deer or boar. the creation of this dish was beyond my comprehension. Yes, it is wonderful. Elvins do know how to cook. I regretted the words as they left my mouth. I had intended them as a compliment, but this woman knew who I was, and might take them as sarcasm. Not all of us, but most, can get by in a kitchen. She smiled again, and I continued with the last